In this episode, we are going over the 7 key ideas from Peter Zeihan's The End of the World is Just the Beginning. The first section of this book is the introduction. Zeihan's key idea here is that peaceful, interconnected globalization that we all know is very fragile. This starts with understanding that the end, now, the year 22, is really just the beginning, because this is a book about the forces that began civilization and how relevant they remain today, and the unraveling of those forces that we're about to see. The first of those forces is the geography of success, specifically success for growing and processing food, and then freeing up labor to allow a civilization to develop.
In that process, people started to move off of the farm into higher value-added jobs.
The United States of America has the greatest geography of success. We have coastlands that protect us to the east and west. We have great lands for farming in the middle, and we have a system of roads and rivers that allows transport for all of that to interconnect it all. So we have what Zeihan defines as the geography of success. On the back of American success, the Bretton Woods system lifted not only America, but the entire world economically.
We call that Bretton Woods. And the basic idea was that we will subsidize your systems. We will patrol the oceans for everyone. We will guarantee all of your security so long as you are on our side versus the Soviets. We basically told everyone in the world that geography no longer matters because we will take care of it. And so countries that lacked a good geography and didn't have navigable rivers, didn't have large chunks of arable land so they could feed themselves, all of a sudden could participate in a global network that they didn't have to fight for.
However, the system is fragile. Only the USA has the necessary demographics, military might, and food security potential to go smoothly into the future. The second section of this book is about transport. The key idea here is that container ships will be vulnerable and often fail to reach their destinations in a deglobalizing world. Through the Bretton Woods era, safe transport across oceans benefited the entire world and grew increasingly efficient. In a world without the USA controlling everything, these efficient, big, slow container ships will be vulnerable, especially in times of war, as you can see in this graphic that demonstrates the actual insurance necessary for these large ships in times of war. There will be 3 major problems that Zeihan cites. The first is piracy, as we all know. The second is privateering, which is piracy that's allowed by states. And then finally, there will be state piracy. There will be actual states out looking to take goods from other states in order to meet their needs. This will hurt everyone by undoing the efficiencies of the past. However, it will especially hurt importers, most of all China, who has benefited the most from this globalization and will have the most to lose in a world where shipping becomes harder. The third section is finance, and the key idea is that demographics will catch up with global finance. See, finance has evolved from using things for money like barley and then shekels and then metals and finally fiat currency, and this ease of transacting has accelerated economic growth and allowed nations to paper over their problems by printing more fiat currency.
The problem in China is that we don't actually know how bad the non-performing loan situation is. So the official non-performing loan ratio is at the end of last year was 1.89%. So that means for every $100 worth of loans that the banks have made, about $1.89 of those are bad. Now, that figure absolutely defies credulity. Nobody believes that's what the actual figure is. I mean, the United States' non-performing loan figure is 1.1%. The Germans are 1.7%, and China's is 1.89% after what is literally the longest running and the biggest expansion of debt really in modern history. So the question is really, then how bad is the debt problem? And it's a complete black box.
Demographics will catch up with hyperfinancing. Demographics in terms of how old your population is will determine their earning, spending, investing, and tax paying through the lifespan of citizens. When retirees draw from a system and there are too few young people earning and paying taxes into that system, the system will crash. If the system is shrinking, a capitalist way of life that depends on constant economic growth may actually become irrelevant, and Zeihan suggests that it may need to be replaced by a new way of managing the remaining capital. Capital flight will continue and accelerate, and inflation will continue to rise.
We were always going to have an inflationary pulse here, and it is going to last until such time that we probably double our industrial base. I don't see that process being done until at least 2027.
The fourth section is about energy, and the key idea here is that the global energy market is unsustainable, and a world with less energy will ultimately de-industrialize. So much of our energy comes from oil, and Zion points out that oil markets currently demand complex operations that can't tolerate big changes. Just examine gas prices in response to a single event like the invasion of Ukraine. The Bretton Woods system allowed countries to trade economics for security.
It was a straight up butter for guns swap. We will pay you to be on our side.
This made the USA so prosperous that it had to import oil at first, but invading Iraq in 2003 pushed prices to $150 per barrel by 2008. Zion points out that lucrative oil markets brought new entrants and ultimately the shale revolution. Then the USA returned to being a net exporter, no longer needing to control the Straits of Hormuz for oil from the Middle East. And that's that the Straits of Hormuz are no longer something that we need to protect for our own sake. We're protecting it more for our partners now, because we are not so dependent on the oil in the world, and now our partners are. So we still protect the Straits of Hormuz to get oil moving out of there, to get it to our partners economically, but we as the US no longer are so dependent on having that function. This is something that makes for a very fragile position when we don't need to keep it all going, and brings us back to point number one, the Bretton Woods Agreement. Do we really need to keep all of these shipping lanes protected for the rest of the world? This leaves other countries to struggle for control of oil.
But if you're anyone else, this is a bit of a problem, because the Iranians and the Saudis have some very strong opinions about who should be in charge in that part of the world. And if the United States is not there keeping them separate or picking sides, I expect this to boil up into another crisis on a scale roughly similar to that of the Ukraine war.
While there's some hope for green energy, Zion points to its many limitations and believes that the world with less energy from oil will ultimately deindustrialize, decivilize, and burn more coal, which may actually increase global carbon emissions. The fifth section is about industrial materials, and the key idea here is that materials are how the world really ends. Materials have defined history: the Bronze Age, the Stone Age, the Iron Age. It was actually the Black Death and scarcity after that that brought about new techniques to work with materials and create the materials that have enabled the Industrial Age. Industrial materials have unique geographies of access, so piracy will grow to access things that we can't access in our native countries. While oil is vulnerable and critical, any green tech energy system will have many more material inputs, and each of those will have critical chains of supply to cover, making green tech even more exposed to a lack of materials than oil. But maybe post-COVID, we are on the verge of our own Black Death sort of effect. Maybe there will be a renaissance and we'll have some sort of breakthrough again in material sciences, just as we did that kicked off the Industrial Age. Steel is most crucial for industrialization. Expect shortages of steel, and expect the US Gulf Coast region to increase its smelting capacity. This is really how the world ends. Peter says that no amount of financing can overcome the physical absence of materials. The sixth section is about manufacturing. The key idea here is that the United States of America has sacrificed its industrial potential to maintain the Bretton Woods system, and now the USA is poised to rapidly expand its industrial base. Supply chains run on tight margins, razor-thin margins. Small changes can break supply chains, hence the delayed release of Peter's book. It's actually due to a paper shortage that the book was delayed until June. The supply shortages of 2021 were mostly due to a surge in demand, but the shortages of the future will be due to a lack of supply. Labor variation is crucial to manufacturing for each skill level to produce specific components at maximum efficiency. Without globalization, manufacturers can't access a wide range of labor variation, thus decreasing their efficiency and decreasing supply. NAFTA, however, will access varied labor within the continent and may include Colombia in the process.
And that probably can be recreated in the U.S.-Mexico border region, especially with a little bit of help from Colombia.
Zion says that the United States of America has sacrificed domestic industry to keep the Bretton Woods world growing. But in a deglobalized world, the U.S. can focus on expanding its industry, focusing domestically to manage supply and manufacturing needs. The seventh section of this book is agriculture. The key idea here is that famine will soon be a much bigger problem. Zion says that agriculture is the biggest issue. It is where civilization started. Back to the beginning of the book, the geography of success. For agriculture, that was what freed up labor, ultimately, and allowed the journey that we've been on as a civilization, adding more and more value to our work rather than just focusing on subsistence-level activities like agriculture. Efficient harvests and using rivers to mill wheat allowed for the specialization of labor. And the industrial age took efficiency even further by adding synthetic inputs such as fertilizer. But now the system is so optimized that disruption of any sector can disrupt agriculture. Think of it like an airport that is easily backed up by delays at another airport. However, some technology may increase yields.
You're talking about being able to increase yields by 250% before 2035. That's really impressive. We've never had that kind of expansion in yield growth. But again, it only works in places that have the financing for the equipment and the inputs. And that means if you have to be in a large row crop environment like the United States or Canada or Australia, or have a government that's really involved in making sure their agricultural sector doesn't break down, like say France. So there's maybe a dozen countries that can do that, and that will allow us to feed an extra half a billion, maybe even a billion people.
But that is not enough to offset the changes that Peter predicts that have already been covered in the sections in this book.
That's not enough, but it's a start.
So famine will be a major issue. Peter writes that this is the ultimate country killer. And people ask Peter what keeps him up at night with all the issues and doom and gloom that he's aware of in the world, and he says that this is it, that famine is the issue that keeps him up at night. Before we discuss the epilogue of this book, let's consider that Peter might be wrong about some of these things. What topic should we address next? Should we discuss more geopolitics and finance with China's Great Wall of Debt by Denis McMahon, or more technology and futurism with Homo Deus by Yuval Noah Harari? Comment below. The epilogue to this book points out that never has any country emerged so dominant as Peter predicts that the U.S. will emerge in 2040. After many of the struggles of deglobalization have sorted them out, there is one caveat. Will the millennials have children? We don't know. But let's assume they do. What happens when a superpower like the USA becomes even more superior? That is the question that Peter wants to explore in his future work. And that is our summary of Peter Zeihan's The End of the World is Just the Beginning. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe.